You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. This week's episode is about the first things we do each morning and how they set us up for the rest of our day. For me, it's choosing the perfect outfit. Today's outfit is a pair of gold hoops, a dress with a snake on it that makes me feel like a cowgirl, and some ugly, comfy running shoes. When Pat woke up from a drunken nap in the back of his van, he wanted to do the same thing. But when he looked for his favourite pair of skinny jeans, they were nowhere to be found. There's a language warning for this story.
Some parents raise their kids to be like really fussy about security. Always keep your, you know, wallet near you. You know, always put your laptop in a locker, you know. Always lock the front door, you know, every time you come inside, all that stuff. Because people are terrible. They're out to fucking steal your shit and hurt you. So those parents are not my parents. So a part of my identity that I haven't been able to escape from my childhood is this idea that, like, security is just not, it's just a waste of time. So in the house that I grew up in, you know, the door was never locked. All of our valuables were on the mantelpiece, ready for someone to come in and steal them conveniently. And no one ever in my family said, like, hey, where are the car keys? Because the car keys were in the ignition in the unlocked car on the driveway, always. And so that's fine. That's an okay way to raise your children. The idea was. The idea that I got from my mum and my dad was that, you know, people are okay. They've got their own shit going on. Just trust them. They're good. People are good. But it makes it difficult for me as an adult now. You know, I've got my own house. I've got my own car. I'm trying to conduct relationships with other humans. And nobody thinks like me. The lady who I share an office with locks the fucking door. And I never have my keys, and I come in and the door's locked, and when the door's locked, I go, fuck you! And then, my wife takes the car keys and she puts them on the hook. And so I go out to use the car every fucking time, and I sit in the car and there's no keys, and I say, fuck you! So I've got a problem. I understand it. I understand it's my problem. I get it. But that's just what you needed to know before I start telling this particular story. So it's 2004. I'm 20, early 20s. I've just been in Tasmania working on forest activism for a whole summer with my best mate Gareth. We bought a van together. We put all of our stuff in the van. We drove around Tasmania. We got some germs. You know, we saved some trees. There were some trees we didn't save, but whatever. We came home and we were really happy to be home. We arrived literally. We got off the ferry literally hours before our first class. We were sort of in second year, and after class we went to the pub. That's Gareth and I at the pub. We drank some beer. We drank a little bit too much beer. We had the best time. We smoked cigarettes in the pub, which was the thing you could do back then. And so what I did after getting out of the pub, I was a bit fuzzy-headed, and I decided that I was going to sleep in my van, which was parked in Chippendale. And, you know, that back then that was probably a bad idea. So this is me back then, circa 2004. I was a hippie. I had pants that... It was skinny black jeans were in. So I bought skinny black jeans, but what I did was I got some paisley fabric from the op shop and I sewed wedges into the bottom of the skinny black jeans so that they were like weird flares. And I had a white singlet that I was very, very proud of because it was from the movie Die Hard, and the white singlet said, "Welcome to the party, pal." And this is, you got to understand that this is like a full 12 years before Die Hard had its renaissance. So I was ahead of the game. I don't know if you guys, you know, were around this neck of the woods in 2003, early 2000s, but the Central Park site was a brewery and there was this massive stone wall around it. And everything on the other side of the brewery was sketchy as fuck. And for me, I liked it because it was a great place to park my car. And on this particular occasion, it was a really good place to have a bit of a drunken snooze. So I crawled into the van and I took my clothes off and I nestled in amongst all of my stuff and I left the window open, just a little bit open, you know, just a little bit to let some air in and my foul breath out. And then I had a snooze. And then I really fell into an intense sleep. And did I mention that I was wearing nothing but my diehard welcome to the party pal singlet? And then some 4 hours later, I woke up and it was like this. Oh, fuck. Oh. Should we try to do that again? Oh, fuck. Oh. And I looked out of the van and all the doors were open and all of my stuff was gone and I was alone and naked in a van behind the brewery in Chippendale. And I lay there. There was literally nothing else I could do. I just lay there in my diehard singlet. And I tried to figure out what had happened. And while I was laying there, I sort of decided I knew what happened. I was in a deep, deep drunken sleep. And someone had sort of walked past and gone, "Oh, hello, the window of that van's open. I might just reach in and see what I can see." And then they reached around and opened the door. And at some point they must have realized that there was a naked guy in there. And this is what I think is really impressive. They instead of going, "Oh, well, there's a gross dude in there, I'm going to back the fuck off." Instead they went, "You know what? We can roll with this. No, we can roll with this." And so they systematically stole every single thing in the van while I slept. So I sat up and I looked out at the windscreen and I saw a pile of stuff just down the way. It looked like rubbish, but I thought maybe that was my stuff. So I got out of my van and I did a nudie run down the street in my singlet. No one was around. No one saw me, and I looked through the rubbish and there, sure enough, I found my pants with the paisley wedge cut into them. The skinny black jeans from a fucking, what is that? What's that shop called? From Surf, Dive and Ski or something that is not much less cooler than when I bought them. And so then I put my pants on and I just started to explore the neighborhood and all down the lanes, all around the brewery, there was my stuff, which had been systematically taken through. All the bags had been sort of torn open and all of my stuff had been gone through. So I was walking around picking up, you know, credit cards and like forms from the tax office and Centrelink forms and a pencil case with an eraser in it and, you know, bits and pieces here and there. And some dude was like walking down the lane in the middle of the night and I was like, "Hey man, someone just spoke here to my van and stole all my shit." And the dude was like, "Fuck off." And so I went to the cop shop. You know, there was a cop shop there. Still didn't have any shoes on, just holding my stuff. And I walked into the cop shop. It's like 4 a.m. on like a Tuesday or whatever. And the cops are like, I swear to God, they were playing Nintendo. And I'm like, ring the bell. Bing, hey, I sold all my shit. I just got robbed. And they were like, "Oh." And they got me to tell my story, and I said, "Yeah, my van. They stole everything from my van." And I was like, and they were like, "Where were you?" And I was like, "I was in the van." They were like, "Ah." Oh. And then they were like, "What's the license plate number on the van?" And I was like, "I don't know." And they were like, "Ah." Oh. So that the cops went help. And as I was leaving the cops, I just felt so shitty. I felt so shitty. And you know, the reason I'm telling you this story is because while I was walking back from the cop shop back to my van, that was like, for the first time in my life, I felt what other people feel. This sort of sense that, like, there's people out there. They're going to fuck you up. They're going to steal your shit. They want to do you harm. They want to, you know. And for the first time, I felt like that. And I also felt like I had this really clear sense of what most people feel like when they're just in the city. They, you know, like they feel unsafe because for whatever reason, you know, people can be awful. And I just never learned that, you know? So like Bruce Willis in the fantastic film of the 1980s, my white singlet was getting really gross. And I made my way back, barefoot, back down the lane, back to my van. And, you know, I'll never forget how it felt. I'll never, ever, ever forget that feeling. And now I really try when I'm getting cranky at someone for being annoying and pausing to lock up their bike, you know. I understand that, you know, not everyone feels the same way as I do about you know, like safety and, you know, what it's like to be in the city at night. But there's a little caveat to this story, okay? For the way I sort of healed from this, I felt terrible for a long time. I really did. I felt unsafe in Sydney for the next few weeks. But the way I got past it was I thought I spent all this time dwelling on that time, that four-hour period where I was lying there naked. And the doors of the van were open and anyone who wanted to come past could come past. And they, you know, like, who knows who they were? Like, what kind, how many people must have gone past? How many people looked in and decided, what? I was so vulnerable. They could have done anything they wanted to me. And I thought about that time. And at first it made me feel yucky. At first, you know, obviously it made me feel like weirdly violated or I don't know. But then I started kind of feeling good. Thinking about it, dwelling about it, helped me understand, you know, helped me understand what it was, you know, like that time and what it actually meant. And there's one last detail that I didn't tell you for storytelling purposes. Remember this moment? Remember this when I went, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. Well, I didn't tell you what the first thing I saw was. And the first thing I saw was this. The key to my car, not in the ignition, just sitting there on the console. Everything in the car had been stolen except for that one key. And that was the first thing I saw when I came out of my slumber. And the only way I can explain this is that this person who had systematically stolen everything from my car and, you know, put me in this vulnerable position had also gone, you know what? I think I'm just going to do this guy solid. I'm just going to take the keys out of his pants pocket and I'm going to walk him back to the car. I'm just going to put them right there on the console where he can't miss them. It'll be the first thing he sees when he wakes up from that beautiful, beautiful sleep. And that's what I think about it now, you know? Like, people are good. So you really should trust them. Thank you.
That story was told by Pat Grant. It was recorded at Read to Me, a live storytelling night in Sydney. Find out more at readtome.net.au. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. In this story, we follow three strangers, from the time they wake up to when they sit down at their desks.
Am I a morning person? Definitely. I have to get out. When I wake up, I have to get out of bed. There's things to be done. So I'm not one to lie around and leave it to the last minute. Do I generally wake up in a good mood? Yes. I think I do. I think if you were to ask other people, they may say something different.
I was absolutely hopeless at getting out of bed in the morning. I kind of have gotten better as I've gotten older, but it's really only been this year that I've started that I would call myself a morning person.
Yeah, I think I'm a more of a morning person.
So my morning starts generally about 4:30 a.m. The reason that I get up at that hour is because I do something called a miracle morning, which, despite having an extremely cheesy name, does have a huge amount of benefits. It is an idea kind of, I guess, pioneered by this guy called Hal Elrod, who's a motivational speaker and former salesperson from the US. And his whole principle in a nutshell is that your professional success can only ever match the level of your personal development. It can never exceed it. And if you're the kind of person who's very busy, the time to do that is in the morning, because as soon as we walk out the door and we go to work, or we have to, you know, deal with family commitments, it's very easy to find reasons not to do that stuff.
I try and get down in the morning just to start breakfast with my two boys. They're usually asleep by this stage, but I can hear their Alexa alarm clock in their room starting at 6:45. I have a program so that the lights come on and mimic dawn for them. And it also, Alexa also plays the Minecraft soundtrack, which, if you haven't heard it, is actually a very beautiful piece of music. And then start making breakfast for them. Now, they're old enough to make their own breakfast and look after themselves in the morning, but I remember my own father making breakfast for me every morning while I was still at school, and it's just a nice little tradition. It's a nice way for me to have a role as a carer for them the first thing in the morning. So it's nice. They don't need me. I think I need that more than they need me.
How long have you had Yuki?
Over 1 year now.
Did he change your morning routine?
Probably, because in the mornings I pick up poop on the floor now sometimes, or I find little presents around the house.
What do you mean little presents? Little poop?
Like a pair of socks or a poop or a shoe in the middle of the house.
And do you find this charming, or is it annoying, or you don't think about it anymore?
I don't think about it anymore.
So you're fine beginning your day picking up poop.
Mm-hmm.
That's not yours.
Mm-hmm.
I do make a coffee. I have an espresso machine, which is my second favourite possession after my bed, and kind of get myself organised for the gym and head out the door pretty quickly. There's probably about 25 or 30 minutes between getting up and getting out the door to the gym.
Christoph, are you going to make me my coffee?
No!
Oh, man. I think the days where I work out straight away, first thing in the morning, I set myself up for a better day. I feel more productive. I feel like I've got gym out of the way, so I'm ready to do a lot more things on my checklist.
I use an app to meditate. So I'll do that for 10 to 15 minutes. I have done that in the past for up to 30 minutes and felt completely amazing.
How amazing did you feel? What did it feel like?
I felt like I could see through time. It was sort of, you know, just the most amazing way to start the day. And if I did have the time, I would do it every day. But unfortunately, you know, real world commitments don't allow that.
And then it's off to the bathroom. It may seem strange, but yes, I watch YouTube while I shower. I watch PBS's Space Time, great existential crisis, first thing in the morning.
And then I will head over to my desk. In my lounge area, I also have a little desk set up, and I'll journal for about 10 minutes or however long it takes me to write a single page. You know, sometimes it can be as simple as something as, oh, the gym was really hard today, or it can be, oh, I feel really stressed about this thing at work. Let me just work through that by writing out exactly what it is that's stressing me out. And it's funny with the journaling, I was talking to somebody here about it who said, you know, I can't do it. And everybody here is creative and a lot of them are writers. And they said, I can't journal because I can't deal with the bad writing. And I didn't realize it until they mentioned that once you let that go, it's actually very freeing to go, this doesn't have to be my memoir or, you know, the next great novel. It just has to be whatever my brain wants me to work through on that particular day.
So that's a nice time. It's the only time I have to myself every morning because, you know, very shortly afterwards, the kids are banging on the door, getting in. They need to get dressed. They need to brush their teeth. So it's chaos again with the kids.
However I do my makeup is kind of how I want to feel for that day. If I'm feeling a little bit more grungy or if I'm wearing an all black outfit and I do some red eyeshadow, then it makes me feel a little bit more, not intimidating, but a bit more like confident and a bit more mature versus if I was to do like a light makeup with some pretty highlighter or blush and really light eye makeup, I think I'd be like in a more sweet, happy, bouncy kind of mood.
Because I'm very aware of the, I guess, the prejudices that women face in the workplace, but also it's tied to my own self-perception and my self-confidence. And so I feel when I feel like I've made the effort and that I feel put together, that I approach things in a more confident way because it's not something that I'm worried about how people will perceive me.
And then I see the kids off. Well, that makes it sound quite nice. I kick the kids out of the house. They're quite reluctant to go to school. They are children after all. But I just make sure that they head off. The 11-year-old walks the 6-year-old and then they meet up with their friends down the road and they go off in their own little gang, which is very cute to watch. I started cycling to work around 5 years ago and it has been a huge contributor to my overall physical health, but also my mental health.
I get the bus to work. It is quite a busy route because it's coming down Parramatta Road, which is one of the main sort of arteries into the Sydney CBD. So it can be a really smooth run or it can be a really painful one. And I never really know until I'm in it. I try not to let it get to me. I think this year, particularly since I've been actively trying to be more mindful, I try not to let those things get to me because I look back at myself last year and I was a really easily frustrated, quite angry person, and little things like that would just absolutely set me off. And when it's happening at 8:30 in the morning, it sets a really bad tone for your day.
So I'll only ever listen to music while I'm on the bus. I get motion sickness if I'm looking at my phone. I also don't want anyone watching what I'm watching. If I'm watching Netflix on my phone, I'd rather watch Netflix on my lunch break. There was one time where a girl was watching Dynasty on Netflix and the guy behind her saw her watching it and started complaining to his friend that this girl's watching a shitty show and Dynasty's like the trashy version of Power and that it's like a shit ripoff or something. So that kind of made me self-conscious because I watched Dynasty. I think the one thing that I have wanted to do that was different was just because I've been getting up so early in the morning and I've been looking at the sky at 6 a.m. for each day, I've wanted to get up before sunrise and take Yuki my dog out to like a lookout point and watch the sunrise with him. I think that would be a really special start to my day, or something that I want to do once I finish placement is go out before sunrise somewhere nice.
And this I find is a really peaceful, considered way to start the day. And if nothing else, it's really nice when work isn't the first thing that you do, because I feel like that's how work becomes such a huge part of our identities. I didn't realize how poorly I was handling stress and anxiety up until when it's 4:30 in the morning and the only thing you have to do is take a look at yourself. It really reveals a lot, and that gives you an opportunity to change a lot. It's more just part of my lifestyle now. So I think it will always, in some capacity, be part of my life. It might change the amount that I dedicate to certain tasks or whether I even do certain tasks. But I think the mentality has been the biggest shift, and I think that will probably be there to stay.
I think I can say this not just about myself, but as for other people who are creatures of habit. The habit and the routine and the consistency are very important. You will have things come in and things leave out of their own, you know, sort of attrition or volition. I wouldn't necessarily introduce them. You know, the kids are going to grow older. That's going to change the routine. But I wouldn't necessarily change it too much. I like it because of the fact that it's predictable and it's now habit.
That story was produced by Manisha Rudren. Ryan Pemberton was the supervising producer. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find all of our episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe.